Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovek on Bloomberg Radio.
Underneath the pretty lights, anyone for tennis, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, we are all in for tennis, and we know our next guest certainly is. We love the U.S. Open for a lot of reasons, including our regular check-in at this time with someone who understands the game, tennis, athletes who play it, the world of sports overall, like no one we know. Author of numerous books, John Wertheim is with us, executive editor and senior writer at Sports Illustrated, contributing correspondent for 60 Minutes. I'm going to be a little bit of a fangirl, John. I love your pieces on 60 Minutes. But he's here with us to talk about the U.S. Open. He's on the phone in Los Angeles. John, welcome back. How are you?
Good. How are you? I want to Shazam that intro music. What a great tennis song. I've never heard that before.
We might be able to get you we might be able to get you the information on that. I think our team at Bloomberg Business
Week
can help you.
It's cream. How about that? I didn't recognize that either.
Really?
Did you recognize?
Yeah,
I know, right? I know. Who knew? Is that the Clapton cream? Is there only a Clapton
cream? I don't know.
Hey, John, so let's talk tennis. What are you looking forward to this year? It's an interesting year, and it's a packed year. I'm just warning you for when you're here.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you something funny. This is the first U.S. Open after Roger Federer and Serena Williams, and for years and years, tennis said, what are we going to do when these two titans are no longer around? What's going to happen to tennis? And I think three of the last five sessions set attendance records. Someone was telling me about the secondary ticket the secondary market for tickets is off the charts. There are a lot of good storylines. One of them is the abundance of American players who are still left in the draw. Is this Coco Gauff's year to win on the women's side? Is Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz this great new tennis rivalry? Are they going to have another installment for the third straight major in New York? We miss Roger Federer, we miss Serena Williams, but there is the show goes on. There's plenty of tennis to watch.
Yeah, I love the Tiafo story as well, and he's currently battling it out right now in the third set, in the fourth set actually, right now. So, who else are the big names that you're watching this year?
Oh, some of them are the big names that we're used to. And Iga Świątek won last year and is really establishing herself as this generational player. And is Coco Gauff going to emerge as a rival? And Jessie Pegula is, in fact, the highest ranked American male or female. She's an interesting character with a much different backstory than other players. But I also think the fact that sort of the fields are wider open. And, you know, I think it will be a surprise if either Djokovic or Alcaraz don't win, but there's still a lot of space on stage for other players to make their move. Taylor Fritz is the highest ranked American male, but he hasn't had great success in a major. Is this the tournament where he finally breaks through? There's a lot of, we're used to these three players on the men's side, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, who absolutely dominated. We were used to Serena doing her ritual run, and it's much different to cover the sport now that the fields are wider open. Djokovic is obviously still as relevant as ever, but it's kind of fun not being able to pencil four players through to the final weekend, and you have this capacity for surprise.
Keeping us all on our toes. It's interesting, John. I always think about, we talked about this a lot with golf, right? You know, golf after Tiger Woods. You know, in tennis, we've had a lot of conversations with the USTA over the years about, you know, making sure there's their interest with the younger generation. And we see it continuing. And we do see younger, newer, interesting players come out. What is it about tennis that you think that continues to be a really popular sport?
I would love to see some sort of metric, some sort of data on how many people are at the U.S. Open because it's fun and an event and you walk around and you eat good food and there are guys, you know, juggling versus the actual tennis. I'm never quite, I'd always sort of just for my own, it'd just be interesting to see. I think tennis is actually getting a little bit of a bump from pickleball. I mean, there's sort of this existential fear in tennis that all the tennis courts are going to be turned into pickleball courts and players are retiring to go try their hand at pickleball. But I think it goes the other way. And I think all these millions of people that are playing pickleball have a newfound appreciation for this other racket sport. I think tennis's globalization is a little problematic in the U.S., right? I mean, in golf, all the events are pretty much held in one of three time zones, and the majority of the tour, they're all, you know, mostly American and certainly English-speaking. Tennis doesn't have that, right? I mean, you've got the player from Tunisia is playing the Colombian, and a lot of times the events aren't in the U.S. They're not on U.S.-friendly time schedules. But I think overall, this is a really, really global sport, and I think big picture, especially you look at how many other businesses would love this kind of a footprint. You know, it's like stepping on a balloon, right? So it was a lot healthier and easier in the U.S. when all the events were sort of between California and Florida and the players came from here. It's a lot trickier when you've got Serbs and you've got Tunisians, but I think it's healthier for the sport overall.
You know, it's funny that you say that. We talked with the folks over at IBM yesterday and talking specifically about trying to bring some of the content from some of the other matches that aren't either at Ash or, you know, the main, you know, kind of the main focus, if you will, here at the Open, to make sure that maybe some lesser well-known and even, you know, more global players at least get their time and that their fan base gets to see them. But it's also, there's an AI, artificial intelligence component, where AI is doing the commentary voice, you know, and talking about the players and so on and so forth.
They got a long way to go, though, John. Don't worry. I watched a little bit last night. It's not anywhere close to what you do. But it's not close to what we hear from the McEnroe brothers.
But is it good giving, you know, some of these players who might not get attention in their matches some time, but is it also so a little worrisome, I don't know, with the AI component?
We all love parts of AI. We all recognize some of the upside and the potential. I'm not sure AI's most urgent need is for sports commentary. I mean, I've heard things that, like, it's still, you know, whatever. We one thing we know about AI, it gets better, right? It sort of learns from its mistakes and improves rapidly. But I've heard it's pretty cringy right now, and they're, you know, using terms that aren't real tennis terms, and suspect that'll improve. I got to think there are other ways to accentuate players from other countries from AI, but I guess I give the USTA and IBM credit for at least experimenting. But I think we got a ways to go.
Yeah. Hey, John, I love every year the tips that you write.
Tim and I have been dying off air, going through the list.
I mean, it's not just the ones that you write, but you also crowdsource them this year with, you know, help from people on Twitter, X, whatever you call it. Okay, a couple things I want to ask.
Don't take mine.
I'm not going to take yours. What's the deal with how loud the crowd is this year? And I've noticed it, too, watching TV when I'm not here and watching the matches on TV. You have the commentators complaining that, hey, their crowds in Ash are being too loud while the players are playing.
I think it's healthy. And I think, you know, at some level, I feel like crowds take their cue from players. And you talked before about Francis Tiafoe. He will say very openly, he wants crowds to be louder. He wants them to move around. Yeah. Why can't tennis be more like the NBA? I think there's a sense that, you know, I go to a sporting event, I act a certain way. I get it. It's tennis. It's not NASCAR. I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to go topless. You know, men aren't going to remove their skirts, but they're I think decorum I think you can keep decorum and also have fun and be loud. But I also, honestly, I think that crowds take their cue from the athlete, and if it doesn't bother the players, if it bothers the ESPN booth but not the players, that's not much deterrent.
I totally agree with you.
I saw daggers from the player. She looked up my way during one of the matches earlier this week.
I love this. Unless you have a match that day, there's no excuse for dressing like a player when you attend the U.S. Open. You don't wear stirrups to a Yankees game and shin guards and leotards to the ballet. Leave the wristbands at home, Jam. It's so true. It is really funny to kind of look around the crowds, and there are people, you know, who are just fans, and they're dressed like a tennis player.
I sometimes want to approach those people and say, listen, no judgments, but can you just explain the thinking here? And I don't know if that's unique to tennis. It slays me when you've got these, you know, 60-year-old potbelly guys with wristbands on to go watch, you know. I don't get it.
All right, there's another one we have to do because I felt like, where is that one, Tim? Because I felt like this happened to me because I did take that LIRR to go back home to Manhattan. Oh, here it is. Your fund is crushing it, and the Hamptons were amazing, and your kids loved camp, and your buddy got you these tickets. If you insist on a changeover conversations, keep it down, Tiger. It's so true on the LIRR. Like, they're coming back from here, and they're like, hey, you know, the investments, and they name dropped so many different people and funds.
Could have gotten it could have been a source for you, Carol.
But it gets a little crazy, right, John?
It's a certain type, and you certainly see that type at the U.S. Open. And you know, we all love full markets, and we all love when we close on a high, as we seem to be close to doing. But I don't need to hear about that, and neither does the person who's seen it.
Hey. Before you go, one thing I did want to ask you, and getting back to just a little bit more serious, is the role of Saudi Arabia in sports specifically, overall. We saw it with LIV Golf, WTA, stuff's percolating. How are you seeing it as somebody who has covered this industry for a long time, or covered this world?
Oh, man. We could do a whole hour on that. I did a piece a few months ago for 60 Minutes when I went to Riyadh and sort of saw what it was like on the ground. Mm-hmm. And clearly the Saudis see sports as a place to get involved. Their economics are much different from conventional sports economics. This is not about media rights deals and selling tickets and suites and merchandising. This is about rebranding a country. And, you know, we saw in golf that it took one shape in golf. It's taken others in soccer. In football/soccer, you'll notice, you know, there are big time offers and athletes are being paid a clear mm-hmm. premium to come play in Saudi Arabia. Some of them are accepting it. Some of them are not. I mean, it's interesting to me. There now is a bid on the table for the Women's Tennis Tour to hold their final event, which is sort of their big showcase event, their big money, maker in Saudi Arabia. And I think, you know, we can have a debate about this. Is the tour of Billie Jean King that just left China for ethical reasons because it didn't want sort of to be compromised on principles and they left China, is it strange that they would then, you know, pitch their tent in Saudi Arabia? The flip side is, listen, we're all creatures of incentive, and if Saudi Arabia is offering top dollar, who are we to tell soccer players or golfers or female tennis players not to go take it? It's a story that I think is only going to accelerate because I think it's clearly working. And, you know, the Saudi private, you know, the PIF, the private investment fund, they've got billions and billions of dollars to lavish on this sort of soft power, and sports are clearly going to benefit, and athletes are going to have a real decision to make.
But is tennis different? I mean, you mentioned China several times there and what they did in China. Is tennis different?
You know, I think a couple things. First, the WTA left China citing these ethical concerns. So you sort of set a precedent for, ethics and morals and human rights. That matters to us. It's a little strange to then say, actually, you know what, take that back. It doesn't. The Women's Tennis Tour sort of has this strand and has for decades of activism and social justice and fairness and equality. And this is more than just about forehands and backhands and a bouncing ball. This is a movement. A little strange to then go to a country where women are not given equal rights. I don't know if you saw this week, somebody was sentenced to death for retweeting something that was unflattering to MBS.
Right.
And yet, I think you could argue just as easily, you know, look, Cristiano Ronaldo can make whatever he's, you know, $250 million playing soccer. Why
can't women athletes avail themselves to that money the same way men can? So it's really complex and thorny.
Yeah. We got to run. Come back into the hour in Saudi Arabia. We would love to. You name the date, the time, John. You are here. John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated, of 60 Minutes. Just incredible.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Carol Masser along with Tim Stenovic live here just outside Arthur Ashe Stadium. It's busy, and when you come here, we keep saying it is about the tennis, no doubt about it, right? But there's so much more. We've talked to sponsors. There's lots of merchandise. There's lots of food, and there's a fair amount of drinking, too.
I mean, walking around last night, walking around Tuesday night, I'm going to be here all night tonight. There's almost as many people eating and drinking.
Totally.
As watching tennis inside Ashe, inside Armstrong
Stadium. It's an event, right?
It's absolutely an event. And here's what's interesting.
What?
The U.S. Open has establishments that are familiar to any New Yorker. It's come a long way in the last 50 years. You got Eataly here this year,
Love
Hill
them.
Country, Pat LaFrieda Meat Company.
Love Pat LaFrieda.
Carol, Van Leeuwen Ice Cream.
I love Van Leeuwen Ice Cream. I buy it.
Even a kosher cart here.
Even a kosher.
So even a kosher cart, yeah.
Well, let's get to the guy who's behind it. The man behind it all is Chris Studley. He's Senior Director of Event Services at the USTA. Welcome. Nice to have you here again.
Thank you for having me.
Is it again? We talked to you last year, didn't we?
I think briefly.
Oh, okay, briefly.
One year. We've had you before.
I was just going to say, because I know we always talk about food because it's such a big part of it. Chris, first of all, I can't believe you didn't bring us any food.
I'm sorry about that. I'll grab it after the segment.
No. I'm just kidding. But, like, talk to us about what goes into it. Because you do, Tim is right, as you walk around, that is such a big part of the experience. I've eaten here. Tim has eaten here. Tell us about how you think about it as what you want to offer up to the people who come.
Well, I can tell you, first of all, I look at this tournament as a food and wine festival. And by the way, there's tennis. So much to what you were describing before, people are walking around eating and drinking. And what we want to bring in the names you mentioned is the best quality that there is in sports. We don't want you to come to a sporting event and say, oh, I have to eat. We want you to come here and say what a great meal you had and I got to watch the tennis. So from our offerings that you described to our Champion Steakhouse run by Benjamin's right from Manhattan to Aces bringing the best chefs. We partnered with Tatiana's chef, Kwame, in Aces to do some special dishes for us. So, I mean, it's really about the food to me, for sure.
How do you make sure that the quality is what you get in, you know, the year-round establishment?
So, great question. We meet with these chefs throughout the year. I can tell you right now, we've been talking to people even during this tournament saying, I want in next year. I'm not going to give you any names today, but we will evaluate each and every one. We look at what sells, what do our fans want, what's the quality. We'll meet with these chefs throughout the year. I can tell you, you know, a number of chefs that we brought in from James Kent at Crown Shy to Melba's of Harlem, we've been there in the off season. We sit with them, we talk to them. And, you know, to some, the menus might not lend themselves to a concession stand necessarily, but we'll work with the team to bring that item into that environment for our fan.
How important is it from year to year, Chris, in terms of some consistency so that people come back and they're like, I know this is going to be here, and then also bring in some new?
It's very important, right? Our fans always want to see us innovate. It's the name of the game in food especially. Obviously, trends change over years, and we want to be right there. But you need to have the staples, right? Everybody talks about our lobster roll as being one of the iconic foods of the U.S. Open. It's also our hamburger, believe it or not. They're all Pat LaFrieda, even though his name might not be on that stand. It's all Pat LaFrieda meat. Pat's stand over here, too. The steak sandwich has almost become just as famous as the lobster roll. So, you know, we try to find what our fans love and really gravitate towards and work with it.
Go ahead, Carol.
I was going to just, what about price point? Like, how do you think about that as part of the experience?
Absolutely. You know, listen, we're in New York City. Obviously, we're a temporary event, but we're very price sensitive. in a regard. You know, we would put ourselves up against any other New York City venue and say that we are probably not the most expensive. We may not be the least expensive, mm-hmm. but we're right in that sweet spot because we want to have value for our fans. I would tell you that our quality, though, surpasses our peers here. So we know that the prices sometimes can be healthy, but we know that we're giving you the best quality you can possibly have at a sporting event.
So are you seeing what's the typical markup from an established restaurant that you'd experience in Manhattan and the same dish that you'd get here?
Is there a markup?
It's not. There's no direct correlation in that regard. You know, a concession stand, you're not going to really be able to compare directly to the items. I can tell you in some of our restaurants, there's a slight markup just for, you know, bringing the team out here and operating. But there's no set percentage, say.
Hey, one thing you had brought up.
Yeah.
We were thinking on this jobs day, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. Hospitality, one of the continued bright spots mm-hmm. when it comes to the U.S. labor market. And the biggest gains in August were in healthcare, hospitality as well, leisure and hospitality. How is it getting employees right now?
You know, our team did a fantastic job. I mean, I oversee our front of house services as well. And this was probably the earliest we were ever fully committed for all of our seasonal staff that we bring in. Which is it's wild to think about with the lowest unemployment rate, right? But people want to come work here. We have people that take vacation to come work here. You could be a server in a restaurant and you're saying to your New York City restaurant, hey, I want to go out to the open and work there.
Do people who work for one establishment get paid the same hourly wage that work for another establishment?
Most of the time. I mean, there are some different levels depending on how many years you've been here, who you're with, what restaurant in particular. But,
right. You
know, it varies. You interview for the position just like you would at a restaurant in New York City.
How difficult is it to set all this up? I love logistics because we come here and it just looks like it's been here forever. And we know it goes away.
I love getting asked those questions. I tell you the truth. The logistics behind it is mind-blowing, to say the least.
How early do you start?
The day after it ends. I mean, we're here figuring it out.
Okay, all right, but that part. But building this and building everything that's in your world to make this happen, when does that start?
The planning goes into place right away.
Okay.
The build-up, I mean, by the springtime, you'll see a lot of movement here and things getting physically set up, aside from any new buildings we're going to build, right? You know, obviously, we went under this massive renovation. That was all year for a number of years,
yeah.
And we stopped for the open, and we went back into it. But in terms of the general repeat business that we're doing, we'll start in the spring.
We're speaking right now with Chris Studley. He's Senior Director of Event Services here at the USTA. We're live at the 2023 U.S. Open.
But on that, in terms of the food part of it, like what's involved logistically with building that out?
So we'll have trucks showing up in early August.
Okay.
You know, with the volume of food and beverage we do here, we have trucks coming in every single day, but we'll build out a temporary warehouse facility, essentially, to house everything. I mean, you mentioned some of our drinks, the Honey Deuce. We sold 400.
I have a Honey Deuce cup at home.
Well, we had
yes, a lot of people walking around with like 7 Honey Deuce cups yesterday.
Okay, so I'm lame.
So to think about the logistics behind that, 400,000 cups are sitting behind the scenes right now. You know, they're ready to go, and the team's moving them about, getting them all over the site. So, I mean, the logistics behind it is massive.
So speaking of the Honey Deuce, one of the reasons I asked about labor was because as I was leaving yesterday after doing our broadcast, the lines for some of these concession stands were so long, Chris. And I couldn't help think to myself, there must be people who see these lines and say to themselves, I don't want to wait in this line. And, you know, therefore the USTA is not going to get my $22 for the Honey Deuce. How do you control for lines here?
It's a great question. And I'm glad you mentioned the Honey Deuce on that one. So innovation, right? So this is the first year we're actually able to batch some of the Honey Deuce to try to speed those up. We rolled it out in somewhat of a pilot program this year at 10 different locations around the site, and we're seeing that we're able to increase service. So our goal here is let's roll it out all over next year.
What does that mean, batch?
So we are able to prepare part of the drink in a ready-to-mix container, and we can control the quality. Most importantly, you know, if you go to a bar and you get a drink made and you may not like that one,
yeah.
Here we can actually do the quality testing behind the scenes, know the exact precise measurements, and then also deliver it to you faster. So innovation is key, and we're going to speed those lines up for sure.
But that's the question. Is it, and forgive the terminology here, but is it a failure to you when you walk around and see huge lines and people waiting?
It's disappointing, for sure. I mean, we want to be able to service every customer as quickly as possible, but we also want to deliver that excellent experience. So it's a fine balance, for sure, but we're trying to make sure that we innovate as much as possible.
Are there areas around here where you walk around this year and you say, okay, well, we could do another of this type of concession right here and ease the demand a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's surprising because each year, I mean, we know there's some things that never fade, right? The Honey Deuce is not fading. It is the most popular
drink. Is it really?
It is, by far. But, you know, sometimes there's surprises.
That's Honey Deuce lovers. No, it's actually a match. Sorry.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, no, it's always interesting to see what's going to be the top seller of the year.
Are you adding more drinks that are like...
Well, we have this year we have the Aperol Spritz as well.
Right.
And Dobel has joined us with their Ace Paloma cocktail, and they're both delicious. I encourage you to try them before you leave.
What's interesting, too, is are there workers that you needed that you couldn't hire, or you said you could get everybody you wanted?
I think we're pretty well staffed. I would say that we're really well staffed. And, you know, we benefit from the folks that come back every year, and they help us really make the operation hum.
Here, Carol, I got a number for you.
What?
1.2 million. Okay? That's 1.2 million melon balls in the Honey Deuce that the USTA is going to produce this year. What?
90,000 pounds of beef.
Did you have a hamburger today?
I did have a hamburger today. Surprise. And I ain't done yet. All right, we're going to come back with Chris Dudley, Senior Director of Event Services at USTA. He's got a big job here. He's getting it done. I know the answer because we were talking about it before we got going again. But supply chains were, you know, you go back a few years coming off the pandemic, nightmare. Are you getting everything you want and at decent costs? Or
you got enough lobster?
I think so. Okay. I think so. I think we're in good shape this year.
Got enough vodka? No.
Fortunately, it's one of those things.
Sorry. Let's get to the priorities.
For sure. Fortunately, it's one of those things that's kind of been in the past for us now, thankfully.
Not an issue, but it was an issue, right?
It was an issue a while back, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think everybody fought through the same thing, and I think we're on the other side of the supply chain in terms of our business right now.
So, what were the challenges this year? If it wasn't employees, if it wasn't supply chains, what's the big challenge this year?
Mm. Weather. Who can control the weather?
But look at us.
I know.
You did okay with that.
It's like a California day right here. It's amazing.
That's the biggest concern we have right now. I think we're doing okay.
I do wonder, though. You said while we were off air, you know, I'm here before everybody else and I leave after everybody. I mean, what are the calls that you get? Is it that, wait, you know, electricity isn't working or we ran out of burgers or something? Like, what is it? What's the stress points for you doing this?
You know, to your point earlier, lines and things, you know, you want to make sure everybody has a good experience. So we're trying to send people out. Like during the typical day, I might hear that we might have an issue with a line over here, a line over there in terms of food. If one of those facility issues pops up, we have a great team here. One of my counterparts on the back of house side helps me out tremendously. Give a quick call and we get everything right back on. So those are the little pain points.
How do you alleviate a line?
Well, you can send more people over to help out, right? I mean, if you get a Honey Deuce line, you try to get a couple more bartenders over there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done everything we can. I mean, POS is always one thing that we look at, and we've upgraded our systems over the years to try to process those transactions.
We met some folks from American Express earlier today, if you want to talk to them. They know a thing or two about processing
credit
card transactions.
They are a good partner. Well, I think about like a Disney, right? You have apps, and you can like kind of guide people. Like, do you think about that? The role of technology is a big thing here. Do you say, listen, I know there's lines here, but you know what?
So I have a great point on that. I mean, we tried out mobile ordering. Mm-hmm. We did it so that you could order anything from the food village, and then you could grab it and go to your table. And what happened was our customers said, we don't really want to do that.
Seriously?
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. I mean, you know, when you come here, because you're coming here once a year, you want to walk around and check out everything. To your point, we were talking about what's new. They want to see what's new. They want to go look at that menu. They want to pick what item they want. They don't really want to do it on a small phone screen. They want to see the kitchen. They want to know what's going on. So,
okay, 1.2 million melon balls are created, are balled from melons. I think that's the proper terminology here.
For sure.
Each year. I guess so. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Are
it's Friday afternoon.
Stuff up
no,
as we go.
I'm not making stuff up. I think that's how it goes.
Maybe a little bit.
We talked to the folks at Chipotle about quarterly, and they've started to invest in technology that automates guacamole making so they can free up employees who spend time doing that laborious task of actually cutting up avocados and getting the guac out. Can you do that with
melon balls?
We actually get them pre-balled.
Okay.
So when we bring them in, we've done that. We started in the very beginning.
All right. Interview's over. You got nothing.
I'm telling you. We look for
so
every way to make
it
go
faster.
So it comes
to you from the supplier.
Comes to us from the supplier, pre-balled. But we do have people that skewer each one. So we get three. Because if you notice the drink, it's got three melon balls to indicate the same number in a tennis ball can. That's the tie there.
I never knew why it was three.
Yeah.
What was interesting, too, is I think about more broadly, the things that you guys are doing here,
sure.
From the USTA and using this incredible space. I mean, it is obviously about tennis, and this is your big event, rightfully so, but you're doing other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, tennis is number one. I got to say that off the top.
I had to stop talking about melon balls. I'm just going to say, oops, I threw my pen on that one. I was a little, no. But anyway, talk
sure.
about the other events.
Yeah, no, obviously tennis is number one for us, but we're always looking for new ways to use the facility. It's great. We can bring staff in. They can work with us along, you know, throughout the year, which is critical for us.
Like a concert venue.
We would love to. If you know somebody that wants to play here, you let me know.
Taylor Swift. As long as I can get a ticket.
No, but are you talking with people who have, you know, whether it's Barclays or other, like, they definitely have relationships and they do things.
Of course. And we do have some people talking to other people, to put it very vaguely. But, no, we would love to host a show for sure. I can tell you 10 days after the Open this year, we'll be converting the tennis court into a wrestling ring for AEW Wrestling on September 20th. So it's going to be our third show here. They call it AEW Grand Slam, appropriately.
Yeah.
So it's drawn about 18,000 people year over year.
That's quite a few.
For sure.
Given, you said 24,000 is capacity?
24,000 is capacity. We've got about 18,000 in the house for the show.
And is it? Do you typically do it with the roof open or does it depend on weather?
We actually keep the roof closed for all of our outside events. It makes things so much easier, less worry whether there's going to be weather.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the dogs that were here. They spend a lot of time getting their hair done. Talk to us about the Westminster dog. I've seen it. I'm a dog lover. I've been to the Westminster dog show. There's a lot of, you know, primping. But you guys have done it, right?
We have. We got one under our belts. We got them coming back again next May. We're super excited. They took over Arthur Ashe Stadium, all the player areas, you name it. We had 3,000 dogs here over 3 days. It was wild.
Okay, what's the one event that you haven't gotten to host here that you want to host? What's on that?
What's on your wish list?
Yeah, what's
right?
on your
it's
wish
on my
list?
Yeah. I'll take a concert.
Give us
sure.
a name, though.
I call me. Let's talk about it.
But you do think about the exclusivity. First of all, it is a great venue, and it is a little bit smaller, which I like to go to smaller places, right?
Sure.
I mean, otherwise they get so big. So you could really do some really cool things.
I agree.
All right. So
it's also easy to get to.
Yeah.
Which I think people forget. Just jump on the 7 train.
Or the LIRR, which is
very
what
easy.
I did. Someone's coming here. They're coming for a night. What would you advise that they do? They're going to watch tennis, but...
Okay. You got to explore. You know, part of hosting all these other events is getting people out here that may not have been here before. And I can't tell you how many people come to one of our events, whether it be Westminster or AEW Wrestling. And when they walk through the gates, I didn't even realize this place was here because they may not be a tennis fan. So I invite everybody that's not a tennis fan to really explore. And if you are and you've never been here before, make sure you're walking around to check out all the secrets behind the scenes and what we got.
What would you go eat?
I would probably grab some gelato from the cart over here right now.
Van Leeuwen is also really good ice cream.
And Van Leeuwen ice cream. We have our own flavor this year. They created our own US
what
Open.
What is it?
It's a honeycomb fudge slam.
Of course it is.
It's delicious.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That actually sounds really good. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Good luck. And I hope you get a little bit of a break between your next events. Chris
Thank
Dudley,
you.
Of course, Senior Director of Event Services at USTA. Pretty cool, right? It's just, we talk about it. You're going to watch tennis, but you're going to do a lot more here.
7.5 tons of crab, shrimp, and lobster.
What else do I have?
85,000 pounds of poultry.
66,000 bananas, two of them right here. You're watching and listening, Bloomberg Radio.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.